Okay, we're on page 133, chapter 2, Anger the Enemy of the Peace of God. And for orientation, this is the fifth volume of St. Paisios of Mount Athos, Spiritual Counsels, Passions, and Virtues. We are in part 4, chapter 2. Part 4 is the children of self-love and pride, and there are three of them. Envy, anger, and sorrow. We talked about envy last week, and now we're talking about anger, chapter 2. Anger, the enemy of the peace of God. But there's a positive use for anger. There's a positive use for all the passions, actually, according to spiritual writings of the fathers. And Velo Paisios, St. Paisios begins, this first heading is a quotation from later on where he says, we should direct our anger against the passions. Yolanda, I want to be delivered from anger. I'm aware of how inappropriate it is for a, we could say, Christian to be angry. But she says, for a monastic to be angry. Anger, pure anger, is a power of the soul, he responds. If a person who is meek by nature is helped once by his character, in his spiritual progress, now that the idea is that a person who is meek by nature and tries to strengthen his character in order to be able to progress spiritually, that is, build up habitually the following of the virtues in order to help in the spiritual progress. If a person who is like that, meek by nature, helped by his character in his spiritual progress, the irascible person, remember, irascibility is a quality of the soul. We'll remember from previous books, for example, D. Pennock's book, that it's a quality of the soul, irascibility. The irascible person is helped twice as much by the power of his character. So he's talking about someone whose character has been established by habitually following the virtues, and yet is irascible by nature. So a virtuous person who is established in his virtue by his character but is irascible by nature is helped twice as much as a person who is not irascible is helped by his character. An irascible person is helped twice as much as that by the power of his character, as long as he directs this power of anger against the passions and the evil one. Okay. If he doesn't take advantage of this power of his, then the devil will certainly do so. The point being here, if we're talking about a person who is irascible by nature, but does not direct his anger against the passions, the evil one will take advantage of his irascibility and encourage him to direct it against others. So, if we are irascible by nature, I will admit to being irascible by nature, Sharon can attest to it, right? And I'm sick, so watch out. Right? So, you know, if we are irascible by nature, it can be an advantage, but we need to strengthen our character in virtue. And if we don't do that, we just kind of act naturally. You know, all I want to do is act naturally. What song is that? I don't know. You know, but if we just do that, then the devil will take advantage of our irascibility. So if we are irascible by nature, it's imperative for us to develop habitual virtues and have them be part of our character. Because if we don't, we're a sitting duck for the devil. The person who is mild-mannered by nature will not be able to achieve progress by leaps and bounds. So steady, slow and steady wins the race, you know, the turtle. Unless he struggles to acquire manliness. Now this point of manliness, this is the third time in particular that it's come up. And I've commented on it each time. And last time it came up, I referred to the first time it came up. And that was in a telegram on page 120 that the elder wrote to a novice sister, and his advice to her is to stop condemning others. One must be manly. And the manliness we've emphasized the manliness that Elder Paisios is talking about is not a reference to gender. It's a reference to our human nature, our nature as human beings, as members of mankind. It's not an appeal to our individual, especially male, develop some testosterone, sister. Maybe a shot would be good. That's not what he's saying. What he's saying is that, you know, manliness as opposed to being like an animal, some animal, pick an animal, any animal, a dog, you know, or a bear, bearish. Instead, be manly, like a human being. So because this is the third time he has recommended development of the acquisition of manliness, you know, you might run into something like this in C.S. Lewis. You know, it's you know, I remember when they went under the ground and they were going to find Prince Caspian, I think it was, and then, you know, they find a Paraguam, is it? Is that right? They find a cookbook, How to Serve Man, you know. And
well, that was in the Giant's Castle, but yes.
Yeah, in the Giant's Castle, right. Their reference to man is not just male, the male of the species, you know, the women were, the ladies were in danger as well. So it's manliness as opposed to something lower than manliness, lower than our nature as human beings. And who is the man? The man, behold the man, is the new Adam, Jesus Christ. So it's a matter of acquiring this kind of strength of human quality that is ultimately fully revealed in Christ. So he is encouraging the person who is mild-mannered to man up. Part of what it takes to be a human being is the strength, is the use of anger against your passions. That's what he's saying. In order to be able to move by leaps and bounds, you have got to have this irascibility against your own passions. And that's what he means by manliness. The irascible person will achieve progress in no time as long as he makes the intrepid decision to direct his anger against wickedness. What do you think? Am I full of soup? Because he is recommending manliness to these nuns, you know.
I mean, I took from that that we can, those of us who irascible, stronger character.
Irascibility is not necessarily strong character. Irascibility demands strong character in order not to be used by the devil. Remember? The irascible person is helped twice as much by the power of his character, and character is not, it's not character, he doesn't have character because he's irascible. Character is habitual practice of virtue. That's what character is. So we don't want to confuse it with some kind of natural. There's a book, still a copy in the bookstore, that makes a strong and important distinction between character and personality. We have a tendency to confuse personality with character. We could, in modern terms, if we're thinking in terms of personality, say that there is a power of personality. So what a and then be thinking about a person with a strong personality and say, oh, it's a person of strong character. Character is different than personality. We're born with personality. Character we're not born with. It must be developed. And virtue is developed by the strengthening of habitual following of the virtues. That's character. So if we are irascible, it is absolutely essential that we develop a strong character by way of habitual virtue. Otherwise, we'll be at the mercy of our irascibility. We won't be able to use it to direct it against the passions, and the devil will take advantage of it. That's my analysis of this paragraph here. I think I'm right on that. And I'm irascible and sick, so...
Says the irascible priest.
I'm right on that.
Well,
looks like he's saying that we should turn our anger, the power of anger, against the passions and the evil one. And if we don't, those of us who are irascible, don't turn our power of anger against the passions of the evil one, the enemy will take advantage of that power and certainly use our anger in ways that are
absolutely
not going to help us spiritually.
He is definitely saying that.
Whereas the mild-mannered person, it would be more difficult for them to make that kind of progress because, you know, I'm not using character in the same sense that I think you need to be using it. A stronger...
What do you mean? In what sphere are you using the term character?
Like when someone says, he's a character. You know, well, that person is a bold flavor. That's what I mean. I think that's what I'm picking up.
That's not what El Paisios means. I can guarantee you. And I would think that definition would be closer to personality.
Which is what I picked up from what he's saying. If somebody
right.
with a stronger personality...
No, it's not what he's saying.
...is going to be able to fight. But if they don't use it in the right way, it's going to go south. But if we use it against the our sins, against the enemy. Now, you know, as an irascible person, my thinking about, okay, how do we become angry at those things that, you know, give us the most trouble? That's the next thing.
There are some more things to consider. I definitely caution you against the confusion of character with personality.
Yes.
The elders are, the elder vices, not interested in developing our personality. Anyway, I'm not sure you can do that. I think you're stuck with the personality, whatever it happens to be.
Right.
Part of your personality might be, right, irascibility is a part of your personality, possibly. Possibly. That would make sense to me. It wouldn't contradict his point of view, I don't think. Anyway.
Yeah.
Okay. The next page 134. Yolanda, I understand I should be angry with the devil, not with the sisters. Look, in the beginning, one gets angry with others. Later on, if he struggles, he will be angry with the devil if we struggle against our anger against others. And in the end, he will come to the point of being angry only with the old man within himself and his passions. So try to be angry only with the devil and direct your anger against your passions, not against the sisters. Yolanda, are my anger and stubbornness childish passions? And then it gets a little confusing here, but he says no. Anger and stubbornness are not childish passions. To me, this is a kind of foreshadowing of where he later on says positive things. Well, he already said something positive about anger. So he's not going to say it's childish to be angry. He gives an example of a child who does get angry, stomping their feet, yelling, I don't want to, no I won't, when they grow up. We have to put away childish things, let go of our tantrums, stop yelling at the television set, and retain the simplicity of innocence and innocence of childhood, rather than the childish foolishness of throwing temper tantrums. And some children, when they grow up, you see how they end up. They get angry, they start banging their head against the wall. Fortunately, God has made our heads hard, and they're not really harmed. Others tear their clothes, and he gives an example of someone who out of anger tore up a shirt of day, tore it to pieces, let out his anger on the shirt so that he wouldn't harm others. In other words, Yolanda, is anger an outburst? Yes, it is, but isn't it better to direct the outburst against the old man, not against others?
One of the things I picked up on there that you cautioned us in the beginning when we were reading these interchanges was that he's speaking to a specific person that he knows. And so it could be he's saying her specific, you know, no, for, you know, that's not what's going on with you right now. And then he has a long explanation with it. And that's kind of what I thought I might pick up from that.
Could be.
Because anger and stubbornness.
Right. He could just be telling her, you need to get let go of this anger and stubbornness. Anger is not itself childish, but in your case, stubbornness and childish passion needs to be left go of. Is that what you mean?
I think so, yeah. I just was thinking, well, he's not saying that it's never...
It's not always childish. Anger is not always childish, but, yeah, I think you're probably right. That makes sense. Okay, but I have these outbursts? Well, yes, but don't have outbursts against others, but against the old man. And now, annoyed, you talk about being annoyed at my error.
That's a specific word that people will use sometimes.
I'm a little perturbed. I'm not angry.
I'm just annoyed.
Yeah, just annoyed.
I think it's...
What's annoying? Okay, how does this happen, my child? If you get annoyed, you need to find out if perhaps you have the passion of anger. Then on the other hand, it is of course different if one gets annoyed and says something because he is tired and struggling with some problem, a nagging pain or such. Okay, we can be tired. We can have a nagging pain. So it may not be the passion of anger. It just may be that we're tired or we're ill. You know, at times like that, somebody might come along and say, good morning, and get the response, why don't you leave me alone? He only was told good morning, not something bad, but nevertheless, he's tired trying to deal with pain, and he just can't focus on dealing with anything else. Even the most patient donkey will kick when he's overloaded. So, I mean, we can see if somebody has an irrational response like that, instead of getting angry at them, we can say, well, that's not the way that person usually is. But maybe there's something wrong. I should be concerned. Anyway, she has an ongoing problem. This particular nun, I think Jimmy's right about trying to deal with her particular problem. Yolanda, when I am not reconciled with my own self, I find fault in everything, and I react. We have a lot of days like that, I think. So, if you are not reconciled with your own self, it means that you have some spiritual indisposition. Maybe we've tried to swallow something that didn't agree with us spiritually. Just as when one is physically ill and sometimes gets cranky and is tired of listening to other people talking, so too when one is not in a good spiritual state, he lacks vigilance, patience, forbearance. Yolanda, what is causing me to get angry with the slightest provocation? The cause is your belief that it is always others who are at fault. The anger in you begins with the negative thoughts you have about others. If you have positive thoughts about them, you will not examine what they said or how they said it. You will assume the responsibility and not become angry. Yolanda, I cannot believe that I am always at fault. It seems that there is some hidden pride in you. Be careful, because anger includes justification, pride, impatience, imprudence. Yeah, this is definitely a problem nun. A nun that has a problem with herself. Anybody have difficulty relating to this?
No.
Can't always be.
Yeah, right.
It'll always be my fault.
It makes perfectly good sense. Well, you know, that's not how.
That's not how.
Other Paisios don't operate that way.
How the monks and the ascetics look at it. It's always your fault. Even it's always your fault. It's even your fault if somebody else is angry at you.
Right. Right. The only way to use anger positively is if directed against yourself. I mean, she's justifying, you know, anger is justified, she's saying. In some cases, it's not my fault. The anger is okay, you know. I mean, it's, well, maybe in worldly sense, but it's not going to do you any good spiritually. You know. Okay, page 136. We could discuss this more. This is a short chapter. And,
well, I think this, if we are going to discuss it a little bit more,
yeah.
That is this area here of... trying to think about how, you know, this is how this can be my problem, my, you know, how this situation I find, what can I do to fix it? Has it been really, you know, what can I ask forgiveness for? What can I do? It's been really helpful to me in different situations. You know. What I find consistently, and anything I see about the Father said, is that it never ever encourages you to defend yourself. Never. And the stories you hear about them, sometimes they're accused of... There was one monk that was accused of impregnating a young lady. He didn't do it, but he never even denied it. He
He let everyone speak badly about him, talk badly about him, all of those things, and he didn't. He took responsibility for the child, and later on it was found out that he didn't, but he never once defended himself, even for a moment. So that is certainly not the attitude we normally take, or that she's taking right here. Well, I can't always be wrong. But it takes away a lot of a lot of confusion if I'm not worried about whether it's my fault or not. If I, just take responsibility for it. Usually, it's just because my ego is bruised that I want to defend myself. I want you to think better of me. I want other people to think, well, I don't want them to think badly of me. And why?
It's unfair that they should think that of you.
Well, because I want them to hold me in a higher regard, than that.
I'm not like that. I'm better than that, right?
I don't know what we're talking about.
Not when we get angry over somebody's...
I'll tell you. Yeah.
Sin. Somebody's insult toward us, or perceived insult,
right,
or slight of some sort or the other.
In the case of Jimmy's example, there is no other way that the evil that was done could have been dealt with. He did deal with the evil. Actively.
You mean just by taking responsibility and praying?
Not defending himself and dealing with the evil that had been done to this woman. As anyone should. But the part about, well, it's not my fault, but I will go ahead and do this noble thing, that would not have helped. That would not have been on. So it really wasn't any alternative when you think about it. not from this point of view.
He helped the woman tremendously because then he basically took the blame. Yeah. And people.
So that part is taken care of. Now let's deal with the consequences
and the woman
of the evil.
Was no longer like, oh, you slut, you're out, you got yourself pregnant,
Well, still, I don't think she's not going to be in real high regard having gone and slept with the police monk, locally. What does that do for
you? Well, but who cares about appearances? We're dealing with reality.
Yeah.
Right. That's part of it. In other words, there was no other way to deal with the reality rather than respond with concern for appearances, which are irrelevant. Which is kind of what I meant. I mean, there was no other way to deal with the evil.
Right.
The evil was not that an evil was done to me. My good name was called into question. That's the evil. No, that's the evil was done to this young woman, and you deal with the reality of that evil that was done.
But can't you see yourself if you're in his place, and there are people who come to you for wisdom from out of town? They come and see you. They have things.
Well, they're a pain anyway.
They're asking.
I mean, what monk wants that?
They are. But now, your advice might be despised. The things that you've said.
Good. Maybe they'll leave me alone.
That is how I think.
Gracious would think that.
Yes, that's what he would say. Yeah. I remember seeing a story where there was someone, some jealous monk on the mountain, was talking badly about him. And my interpretation was he was jealous, and he was saying, and he said, finally, someone that understands me. And he sent him a thank you, a thank you gift. Not the sort of sarcastic gift we might say, but this guy really gets me. He understands the kind of sinner I am. I really am very appreciative of that. And he wasn't worried about appearances. Once somebody came to his door and looking for St. Paisio, Elder Paisio, and he didn't know how he looked, and it was him. He said, he's gone to get cigarettes. I don't know what he's doing. He told this kid he's gone to get cigarettes, and he didn't know, he's lazy, and he's off getting cigarettes. He didn't smoke. But he's talking about himself, and he tells the kid, he's not here. He goes, but this kid had such good heart, and he just stayed and waited for him. Finally, he didn't know who he was, but that was, I don't know if you remember that story. Mm-hmm. It's a great story.
Yeah, it is. Who wasn't interested in being venerated, that's for sure.
That's true.
Okay, page 136. It is true that certain professions not only harm our soul's well-being, they can even turn the naturally calm person into a nervous wreck. He doesn't identify those professions.
Could be nursing. We talked about that, and Sherry and I did, but we decided it could be any number of different professions.
I think so. Oftentimes, a person is vexed by
teaching.
It's possible.
Little children.
I think it's funny what he said before, that nowadays even the flies are annoyed.
Yeah.
They've gotten more. Flies have gotten more stubborn in his perception of him. He used to go away when he waved at them. Now he's staying. What's he talking about? You think he's really talking about flies?
Could be talking about pilgrims.
Yes.
We have a right to see Elder Paisios.
Yes.
Where is he?
Possible. That's true, though.
Oftentimes a person is vexed by various external factors and has an angry outburst because he's not at ease with what he is doing and actually wants something else. But these reactions are simply external dust that goes away once a person finds that which brings him solace. And this is in response to the sister saying that when she was in the world, she often became angry. Why don't I get angry now that I'm here at the monastery? Well, there's a lot of external dust out there. We don't have that dust here in the monastery because you're at ease with what you're doing, and you don't have all that, those irritations. And so you have solace. You don't have that source of irritation. Again, this is a comment on anger that is a result of being irritated. Be ye angry and sin not. Yoronda, does indignation stem from egoism? Not always. There is also righteous divine indignation. When Prophet Moses had the tablets of the commandments in his hands, saw the Israelites making sacrifices to the golden calf, it was out of righteous indignation that he threw down the tablets and broke them. Before climbing Mount Horeb to receive the commandments, Prophet Moses had told the people what they were to do until he returned. They themselves could see the lightning storm on Mount Horeb, but since Moses delayed in returning, they sought a god. They went to Aaron and told him, "We don't know what happened to Moses. Who will guide us? Create gods who will guide us." And we do that, of course. People say there are atheists, but people always have a god. We create our own gods if we decide we don't believe in the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, or the Father, Son, and Holy Spirit. We will find some god. Aaron resisted at first, but later relented. And these gods are all created, of course. They're all, they labored to make a furnace to melt down all the gold they brought out of Egypt, and they fashioned a golden calf, set it on a rock, began to drink and celebrate, saying, "This will lead us." Then God told Moses, "Descend quickly, because the people have apostatized." Moses descended. He heard shouts. Joshua, who was waiting for him below, asked, "What is happening? Have we been attacked by foreigners?" "These are not shouts of war, but celebration," Moses told him. They came near, and what did they see? The people were rejoicing because the calf would lead them to the promised land. After all, it was made of gold. Indignant at the sight of all that, Moses dashed the tablets with the commandments to the ground, breaking them. Anger, righteous indignation. A spiritual person may become angry and speak out with indignation, but only on important spiritual matters. He has no evil in his heart, nor does he harm anyone. In the Psalms, David reminds us, "Be angry and sin not." Okay, he's going to move to something else next. So, what if Moses had come down and said, "Well, you know, that's the way people are. Here's the tablets. You're worshiping the golden calf, of course, but..."
Well, he wouldn't have been in the province then. He was a prophet. That's how prophet.
Right.
Wouldn't be a very prophet-like response, would it? Just go along to get along, you know.
And then it would have been like this mild-mannered person who was mild-mannered by nature, who needed to acquire manliness and oppose things that, well, it wasn't something evil within himself, though. So the indignation, it's a subtle thing. it can be used, this example, to justify things that we ought not to justify our anger. What makes this situation different? It wasn't Moses' idea of what was inappropriate. It really was. It was more than inappropriate. It was apostasy. I mean, they were there at the holy mountain.
Well, didn't they say his face shone when he came off the
place? Well, later, yeah.
Had been in the presence of God, and now he's looking upon this with a whole different set of eyes. He's looking at it having been, you know, in the presence of God.
I think that was the second time.
Yeah.
And these people, they could see him up there in the light, and he just can't believe that, you know, God led you out here away from the Egyptians, here in the desert. Here we are, and this is what, I'm up here getting these tablets. You know, reading the Old Testament, there's so much that there's no just, there are things that these people do, and there's no justification given for their actions. Things that you think, well, that's a terrible, but there's no justification, there's no condemnation one way or the other. It's a story that tells what they did, and there doesn't seem to be, you know, there seems to be a wide range of personalities that are from King David, King Solomon, Moses, Aaron, all of these different personalities. They do things differently, but not that one is necessarily right and one is wrong. I mean, if he hadn't thrown the tablets down, maybe he wouldn't have had to go back up again. I don't know, but, you know, he did. This is what he did. I don't know that you wouldn't say it was a sin that he threw those things down.
So you're calling this example that Elder Paisios is giving of righteous divine indignation, which does not stem from egoism, into question?
No, I'm not.
Sounds
just
like
as the scripture isn't either. I'm just saying
that's what he's often, why it came up. He's offering it as an example of indignation that did not stem from egoism and is
right.
Divine and righteous indignation.
Sure.
So the Holy One of God has been abandoned at the foot of the holy mountain, and this righteous anger does not stem from egoism. He doesn't, you know, it's true, he doesn't say it's good, but
it's not the anger that I'm referring to, is what he did with the anger. You know, that he could have been really just as angry without throwing down the tablets, is what I'm saying. And I'm not saying he shouldn't have. I'm just saying this was his personality, is what he did. That was, he was Moses. You know, and Moses was...
Yeah, I don't buy that.
No?
No. That's an expression of his personality. And it's
sure.
Not, it's not really saying something of a permanent nature. And the idea that, well, there are a lot of different personalities in the Old Testament, and this kind of, it comes down to their personality. No, I disagree with that. Probably because I'm sick. I would disagree even if I weren't sick. I wouldn't be as direct, probably. But definitely, the things that are shown in the Old Testament indicate the way things are between God and man. They're not like a novel or you know, kind of like we watch a movie and there's a fictional dramatization based on the personality, which we call characters. You know, that's not the way character is used in spiritual literature, but that's the way we think today. And I don't think the Old Testament is an example of that sort of thing. I do think that there are archetypes given in the Old Testament, and Moses is one of them, and I do think that Elder Paisios is tapping one of the types of the Old Testament, Moses, the prophet Moses, who saw God face to face and had this direct relationship with God and was given these commandments that human beings need, that we need as human beings. And on his way down the mountain, he finds that the people have done what they've done, and God is wrathful by way of the objectivity of the reality of his nature. You know,
and he broke the commandments, saying that you aren't worthy of having these commandments.
And they weren't.
That was his righteous indignation, is that you're just not worthy as a people of having these commandments.
Yeah, it wasn't an expression of his personality, I don't think.
Well, there's another place when he becomes angry with them for the same sort of thing. Hadn't made a golden calf again, but they were complaining against God that they didn't have any water. And so God told them to tap a rock or do something to the rock. and he struck the rock instead.
Right.
Well, this kept him out of the promised land. This action did. It just seemed like he had a really tired of his people, really frustrated with them, and it seems like it's in the same sort of vein, but maybe not. But
Well, I think if you reduce it to his personality, you miss the. There's no way to even hear the point.
Well, I don't think it's anything to be reduced, but it's like, you know, I hear you say, well, was this his personality? And it doesn't have to be either his personality or an archetype. But this is the person, that the actual human being that...
Well, I think it does. I think it does have one, that's be one or the other. If you say it's his personality, which is a very contemporary way of looking at it, then basically you're kind of, you're reading the Old Testament in a way where it is not revealing the relationship between God and man. And I think it is, and does. And this is an example of it, it seems to me. And if it weren't that way, then why on earth would Elder Paisios bring this up in the first place? Just to kind of showcase Moses' personality?
As an example, he's kind of
a guy who does things like that? You know?
As an example of anger that was justified anger.
He said righteous divine indignation. It doesn't even strike out against the people in a sense. It's just, it will not be moved, more or less, you know, or dissuaded. It stands as it is. It's almost like the tablets break themselves in a way. Yes, he throws them down, but it's not, I don't think, an expression of his bondage to his passions. It is an objective response. The reality of things is that God is holy, and human beings have a relationship to God that is the way it is. You know, it's a matter of the affirmation of the reality of things. And this righteous indignation is a revelation of the relationship between God and his prophet and the people. It's certainly not a matter of the personality of Moses. That's my opinion. A spiritual person may become angry and speak out with indignation, but only on important spiritual matters. He has no evil in his heart, nor does he harm anyone. Be angry and sin not. So he is saying that there is anger there, and I'm saying that it's anger based on the objective reality of the holiness of God, and it's not sinful, because he says it's not sinful. Be angry and sin not. He didn't come down and break the tablets over their heads, you know, which they maybe deserved, you know.
Well, I have not for even a moment suggested that it was sinful. Just that it was not,
no,
it was
I know,
not outside
I know,
of his personality
well,
or his character.
Yeah, no, I have to, you know, reject that completely. The idea that that what you find in the Old Testament is the expression of the personalities of these individuals, I don't buy that for a minute. I mean, that's totally, it seems to me, a non-scriptural perspective on the Old Testament. We'd have to do a thing on the Old Testament to get anywhere with that, but I think that if you interpret it that way, I just don't see how this example has any impact.
Okay.
Maybe I should have gone home because I was sick.
I think for me, I can see both things. I don't see.
I don't.
As excluding, I know that, but I don't see why one is excluding of the other. But so I wanted.
Yeah, that absolutely. They're just like character and personality are not the same thing. We had this conversation many, many years ago, 10 years ago when I first came here, and I bought that book, Character is Destiny, because of the fact that there must be a distinction between character and personality. And I know the character is reduced to personality in our society. And it's a disaster. I mean, this man who wrote The Character is Destiny is a Protestant Christian, and he knows it. It's like a criticism of society in general. But it's a fundamental distinction. The confusion between character and personality is a real disaster in our society. You know, and it would make the Old Testament incomprehensible in terms of its actual message if the typal persons in the Old Testament were simply interpreted as though they were personas in a drama. That's not what's going on there. It's not that kind of a text, you know, it seems to me. That's my point of view on it. not angry, just sick, and irascible. So if I'm being offensive, I apologize. I don't think I am, but
no.
Maybe I am.
No.
Okay, good.
You haven't convinced me yet, but you're not.
I don't care.
I want to understand what you're saying. I haven't heard anything that really. I must not fully understand.
I would consider the possibility of your being in error.
Yes, there is a possibility. I assure you that you are in error. What the error is, though. I haven't seen the error.
Have you read that book, Character's Destiny?
Yes, we read that all together. All that. A long time ago. But
yeah, and I know it didn't help. I remember that.
Now you're being irascible. Yes, I must have gotten what I was supposed to get for bed at that time.
Okay. Page 138. Yolanda, how will I be able to overcome anger? The goal is to anticipate it, to anticipate anger, and not come to the point of anger. When you're warming milk, if you don't remove it from the heat on time, it will overheat and spill over. It's a good example, I think. In other words, you can see it's coming. If you anticipate it positively, you're sunk. I mean, I've experienced that.
Looking forward to being angry.
Yes. Justified, after all.
Like a meal you're about to eat.
Yeah. Exactly.
To get into this one.
Smells good.
Better now.
How can I anticipate my anger? By being attentive at all times. Keep watch over yourself and contain your anger so that the passion will not become rooted in you. For if it does, even if you later should wish to cut it away with an axe, it will continue to sprout suckers. And he explains what suckers are. Suckers, young shoots that grow from the underground root of a plant that suck the sap and develop quickly without producing fruit. Remember what David said, I made haste and delayed not to keep thy commandments. So don't wait to keep the commandment until it's too late. You know, you see it's self-explanatory, well put. Say, God protect me from temptations. Lord Jesus Christ, Son of God, protect me from this temptation. As if you were on guard duty. And if some brother behaved improperly, recall the monk who would make the sign of the cross, leaving his cell and say, God protect me from temptation. He was ready to confront any temptation. It was as if he was on guard duty. He was anticipating the temptation and ready to defend himself. And you can imagine, you know, like you're in hostile territory, and it is your responsibility, you're on guard duty, you have to be ready. You can't be, you know, smoking your pipe, or I was going to say cigarette, but I wouldn't do that. Smoking your pipe and just kind of relaxing, and you know, here pops somebody up, and by the time you're getting ready, the milk is getting warmer, and it's too late. So it's, you missed it. Missed your opportunity to do what you're supposed to do and pick off the enemy, pick off your anger as it starts getting, because those are the enemies you want to shoot. You know? And if some brother behaved improperly to him, he was ready to address him with meekness and humility. Now, of course, there's another way of standing guard, where we want to make sure that nobody is taking liberties. And, you know, if they do, we're ready. Boom! If we could be that ready to pick off the enemy that we need to be picking off, we'd be in good shape. Yolanda, sometimes when a temptation comes, I say to myself, I will not speak up. But in the end, I have an outburst. What do you mean by the term outburst? He ridicules her a little bit. What do you do with the broken pieces afterward? So what are you talking about, an outburst? Like you're some kind of exploding pot or something that's overheated. Like, in other words, it's inevitable. You know, I was trying to do it. I was trying to say to myself, oh, speak up. But then there's an outburst. In other words, it was not that I didn't accept it. I didn't will it. There was just an outburst. And so he ridicules that by saying, look, you're like a pot or something that blew up. What do you do with the broken pieces afterwards? Seems you do not have much patience, which is why you reach a certain point and have your outburst. You need a little more patience. Before speaking out, say the Jesus prayer a few times to receive some light. Yolanda, what should I do when I react to the behavior of a sister? Look on the sister with a good will. Try to justify her with love, you know, his technique that he uses. To hold off, to hold, slow things down, buy yourself some time. This will help you naturally to acquire a steadfast and good spiritual state, so that when the passion of anger comes, it will find the place of your heart occupied by love and not be able to stay. It will go away. Remember, anger drives out love. But if you are well established, your heart as a place occupied by a good spiritual state of love, and not Beatles kind of love, but the real deal, you know, the love of God and others, and justifying them in order, that sort of thing, as other praiseos would. If that's your internal condition, anger won't be able to stay. Because things happen. Like in the last chapter, Elder Paisio says, we can't avoid being aware of the fact that things are the way they are. And that there are lousy, rotten things going on out there. But this is how you deal with them. You deal with them by dealing with yourself. It's the only thing you can deal with anyway, ultimately. So if you prepare yourself in this way and you're watchful, this is the kind of condition it is possible to achieve. You know, lots of times he will recommend things to us, and they're not necessarily things that can be easily accomplished, but it's important for us to realize that they can be accomplished, that there really is an alternative, you know, that we are not at the mercy of things that just kind of build up and explode, and there wasn't anything I could do about it. Father, I'm sorry, but this happened, that happened, the person was this way, that way. All those things may be true, but the fact of the matter is that we don't need to explode like some kind of inanimate thing that is controlled by the natural forces in the world.
Like we're just an observer watching what happened and not bearing the responsibility.
Yeah, I mean, people even talk about that, you know, when they do things that they would never have thought they would do, seeing themselves do it, you know, out of kind of an almost an out-of-the-body experience or observing.
Maybe that can sort of happen if we've allowed our passions to be so in control that, you know, our will has been weakened to the point that...
That happens, and the other thing that happens is that people just blank out and don't remember it, often.
In anger.
When people do things, oh yeah, yeah. Like when I went out and went back to the back of the bus to punch that kid out, who deserved it, you know, and put my hand through the bus window, which is a great accomplishment. I encourage anyone who doesn't believe so to try it. It's also very painful.
Ouch.
And expensive for the bus driver as well. Okay, next section. This one is difficult. This one is more difficult because of the expression. It's a scriptural expression. We'll probably have to pay some attention to it to get everything out of it. We give way to wrath with humility and silence. Now, this expression, give way to wrath, is not immediately comprehensible, it seems to me. Yolanda, how can one give way to wrath? What does she mean by that?
Not what we typically mean.
But what? Now, I'm asking this question having done some research, so I'm, you know, playing good teacher here, because I know the answer, because I spent time looking it up. So, but it doesn't make it just doesn't sound to give way to wrath. I mean, what it sounds like is that giving way to let wrath and letting it overpower us with humility and silence, that can't be, and that's just what it's just
certainly not
can't be what it means. So I did some research. This is a reference to a quotation from St. Paul, Romans 12:19. The quotation itself, all by itself, won't help a lot, because that's the expression, is in the quotation. Dearly beloved, avenge not yourselves, but rather give place to wrath. For it is written, vengeance is mine, I will repay, saith the Lord. So give place, or give way, is giving place and giving way to the one who is justified in wrath. Now, who is that? Not us.
No.
God. So we are giving place to God, because God is the one whose wrath is justified, and he will deal with it in his own way. Probably not the way we would have dealt with it. You can almost count on that, you know. I mean, God is not as not understood as well in the Old Testament, after all, as he is in the New Testament. You know, a lot of the experience of the wrath of God in the Old Testament is difficult, I think, for us as Christians to relate to sometimes. But this is not St. Paul, because he was a good Jew, well-trained.
His example seemed to mean, you know, instead of standing up to someone else's wrath, to give way to that wrath, not to
give way to God is the one who has got to deal with this. Yeah.
But he gives the example of the snake. The snake backs off.
Right.
The frog saved his life by backing up, didn't try to fight the cat.
Right.
He gave way to the wrath coming from an outside force coming toward you. Certainly doesn't mean give way to the wrath that we feel welling up inside us.
Right. Okay. Page 140. Yolanda, when we disagree with some sister and each one insists on their own opinion, we reach an impasse, and in the end, I become angry. Look, one of you must humble herself and give in. I just gave this advice to someone the other day. I gave the example of, in married life. It's not a matter of who's right. It's a matter of who is going to deal with the fact that someone has been offended. Just like the example of the monk that you gave, Jimmy, about it's a matter of dealing with the reality. And he is not impeded by a concern for his reputation. So he deals with the reality. It's the same kind of situation here, I think. One of you must humble themselves and give in. If two people want to carry a large beam through a small doorway, one of them has to step back and allow the other to go first. Otherwise, they will not be able to get through. You know, everybody's two guys carrying a beam, or two nuns carrying a beam this way through the door. It won't fit. One of them has to back up so that they can go straight through the door. It doesn't matter which one backs up. So, well, I'm right. I'm not going to back up. You know, well, I'm right too. They could have both be right. It's irrelevant. What are you going to do? This beam will never go through the door. One of them, the important thing is, deal with the reality, one back up, and you go through. You know, that's the difference between dealing with the reality of the situation rather than standing on your dignity. You know? And you could both do that.
Well, the question there
you could both be right.
This keeps coming to my heart and mind about this stuff. If first of all, our goal is the right one, all of these things seem to fall into place. If the goal is to get the thing in the door, and not to prove that I am have the smartest idea of getting to the door, then get to the door. But if the goal, you know, if my goal is to something else, to prove that I'm right, lose my ego, make sure you notice how smart I am, or you know, having the best way to get to the door, it can really.
Of course, if you back up so that you can get through the door and give the other person a shot. The beam may go through the door, but you lose any credit.
Right. What's the goal? That's right, exactly. What's the goal?
Yeah, not just to get through the beam through the door, but to get through in good spiritual condition.
Right. That's right.
Okay. Whoever gives in stands to gain because he is deprived of something by making a sacrifice. And that gives him both joy and peace. When one outwardly behaves properly and gives in, but reacts inwardly, which I guess was my reference, this means the old man is still living within and is struggling with him. But Yolanda, why is he not at peace even though he behaves properly? You did the right thing, why are you not at peace? How can he possibly have peace? For one to have peace, he must be properly positioned, both inwardly and outwardly. Not just a matter of getting the beam through the door, but positioned properly inwardly as well. That is when anger and distress go away and the peace of God comes. And when serenity of the soul enters him, the smoke of anger is dissipated, the eyes of the soul are cleansed, and he sees clearly. This is why it is only of the peacemakers that Christ says, they shall be called the sons of God. Okay, short chapter, half past. At least 29 pages.